Hello, and on this episode, we see a serial killer go full cocoon with the aid of a pond, Clark sees dead people, and Lex is the Antichrist. This is the Smallville Chronicles. I'm Lou Gonzalez. I'm joined always by the red-bearded companion that I have, Alan Muir.
I'm like Harry Knowles, but like the complete opposite. I'm not even close to Harry Knowles.
Well, you definitely have more head than his brother, or more hair than his brother.
Yeah,
that's pretty much everybody. I definitely realize I need to call you Barbarossa in an episode. All right, so this is actually one of my favorite episodes, and I think one of the most memorable episodes of any season of this show, specifically for the way it ends. We get this amazing foreshadowing, but this is like one of the best episodes, I think, in my opinion, especially this first season. This is definitely in my top three for this season and probably one of my top episodes of all the seasons. Probably should say the name of it. This episode is called Hourglass. Now, did you have anything you want to talk about before I get into the plot?
Yeah, this is actually one of the rare season one episodes where we get really good acting by the villain of the week.
Oh, absolutely. It's also, I think, the first episode where there's no real, it's like a 1 second kind of thing, but there's no real Clark love tension with Lana or Chloe or anybody. That's like just not a factor in this episode at all. Except, I guess, to get Clark to where we see him show up. Alright, so let's get into the plot of this episode. We start with Clark and Pete deciding to, well, Pete basically being forced by Clark to volunteer at an old folks home because in Smallville, you have to put 30 hours of community service into each year. And Pete's like, why are we here? And Lana walks by and he's like, oh, you want to creep on that girl again? We next meet Cassandra. Lana says that, oh, there's an old woman over there that can tell the future. Clark and Pete meet her. She tells Pete that he locked his keys in his car. Cassandra is an old blind woman that can tell the future. She grabs Clark's hand and tells him that someone close to him will die. The next scene we get is Lana with the person she's giving aid to, which is this old cranky guy who's listening to orchestra music and knows everything about everyone in the town and tells Lana that the Langs showed up in the town. I don't know. I can't remember what year he said.
In 1938, which is a nod to when Superman was first created.
All right. I knew there had to be some sort of reason why they said that year. All right. So she takes him over to the pond to go see the koi fish. He gives her a dumb reason of why. I think he says he's cold and wants to get a scarf. Lana leaves. He goes to smoke a pack of cigarettes, drops his lighter, and falls over, taking out some random, on during the daytime, aesthetic lights, and electrocutes himself in the water. We're having him revert in age to his younger, I would say, 22-year-old self.
Yeah, he turns into, yeah, he, it's sort of a fountain of youth.
Yes, it is very much like a fountain of youth. And then he decides to walk off. Basically, we see that we cut to the coffee shop. Lana, Clark, and Chloe are talking about how the old guy is missing and Lana's the only person to ever lose an old person. They just found the chair. We see our other guy is actually in the booth right behind them drinking some coffee. He's been very curmudgeonly about the price of things because he's actually an old man.
Also, he's dumbfounded. He's amazed at how, like, there's a certain line when he asks about the price of coffee, and she says, like, $2.75, and he's like, did they actually bring the, or he says, coffee from the bean?
Yeah, because I think he's confused at, like, the idea of, like, cappuccino, espresso, latte kind of things.
Yeah, and he makes some reference to people bringing the coffee beans in from South America, which kind of, I didn't get.
Yeah, I don't know. Coffee is grown everywhere in the world, so I guess that's where at this time coffee was mostly thought of being from, because it's from Africa, actually. But I don't know. It's one of the things that, one of the few scenes that I think this actor doesn't, I think it's where the lines and the writing doesn't do well, where they're just trying to show that he's an old guy, even though he looks young. All right, so the next thing we see is Clark talks to both his parents first and then Lex about getting his fortune read by Cassandra. During this moment, the only thing really important we get is that Clark is talking about to them how, because he is special in the way he is, he will probably outlive everyone he ever cares about, and kind of dealing with the fact that he could kind of be immortal and the mortality of everyone that he loves.
Yeah, because there's a scene where it's him on his knees and it's rain coming down and all around him are five graves.
The first one we see is Jonathan, then Martha, Lana, Pete, and Chloe, I believe.
Yeah, and he flash speeds away.
Yep. Let's see. So, alright, but all of them blow off the idea that you can actually see the future.
I actually have a piece of trivia about why everyone doesn't believe her. It's a reference to the Greek figure of the same name who was cursed with the ability to foretell the future, but have no one believe her.
Okay, yeah, I did look up that, yeah, her name had to do with the Greek mythology, because her name is Cassandra Carver.
Talking about mistakes from previous episodes, when you did the preview for this episode, you called her Cassandra Carter.
Oh. I was reading off of Hulu, so then that's actually Hulu's fault.
Yeah.
Let me see. They have her as Cassandra Carpenter.
Oh, yeah.
Is that her name?
No, it's Cassandra Carver.
Okay. Yeah, they have it in here wrong. Alright, so Hulu, you suck. Alright, so next part of our story is that Lana says, oh, the cops came by, and he's like, oh, of course they would come by. They, you know, there's a missing person. She's like, no, actually, he changed his name, and he was a murderer. He killed the guy. He was a piano savant, and he was supposed to go to basically their version of Juilliard. His teacher decided to pick somebody else. So he's like, oh, did he kill? Clark's like, oh, did he kill, you know, the teacher? And he goes, no, he said he took the thing I love, so I want to take the thing he loved. And he actually murdered my son. So that is really dark.
Yeah, and something that, or in the big thing about the episode is the reason he's a quote-unquote historian in his con is mainly it's just him being bitter and having just keep holding on to that hatred where he has files on or newspaper clippings of the people who were either on the jury that put him away or a descendant of the teacher, or the person who is in charge of the whole thing.
Yeah, and this leads to our first time seeing him actually kill. We see our killer take out the electricity of a house, and right when the homeowner is about to call the police, he shows up in a overall uniform saying that he works for the power company, goes in to check the circuit breaker, tells the guy that he, you know, the history, like, oh, your father owned the first car dealership and blah, blah, blah. So, yep, now it's like we owned like three in three different counties or something like that. And we see him going through his toolbox and he has like a rot, which is a really hardcore way to kill someone.
Well, I don't know. I'm not sure if it actually is a rot because they say.
I think it's just piano wire, right?
Yeah, it's his method of taking out everybody.
Yeah, it's his calling card or MO.
Yeah.
But we don't actually see the kill, but it's implied, and then we see the kind of news talk about it, I guess, or them talking about that it happened. Right. But you see Clark returns to the nursing home to see Cassandra. She explains that she got the power on the day the meteors came, and the flash from the meteors actually burnt her retinas, I guess, and that's how she went blind. And since then, she's been able to get snippets of the future. When she grabs Clark's hand this time, this is when we get the vision of the rain and the five tombstones. Clark freaks out and runs away. She also reveals to him that before that, that he has seen, or she has seen him in other people's, like, I guess, futures, where they're scared and in the darkness and he comes to save her. The line is, he's there to save them for fear and darkness. And then she tells him to fear the future or embrace it.
And it's kind of funny because this pays off in season 10.
Oh, yes. And basically we continue to see that no one really believes. And we do get the scene, which is interesting, where Lex goes to meet Cassandra. She's just out eating somewhere. And she makes a comment about exactly what he commented on. They're like, oh, he's not actually there for stock tips.
He's there to learn about his future.
Yes. And then Cassandra puts her hand out for him to take it. And then he actually walks away and refuses to do it because he doesn't believe in it. And then I think it's around here as well that kind of a little bit after some of the other stuff where he actually brings Clark in to his special room where he keeps the car and kind of he interrogates Clark, but in a very nonchalant way where someone not savvy wouldn't know that that's what's happening. But he basically reveals to Clark that he's had every expert he can look at the car. They have no idea how he survived, and they have no idea how the roof opened like that so that Clark could pull him out.
He also brings up a man whose room was on fire in a hotel. He was holding on to the balcony or something for about an hour before the fire department came and rescued him. He then bought the hotel and stayed in the room in which he almost died in. And I believe Lex said that when people asked the guy why he stayed in that room, like it's because fate wouldn't know where to find him a second time.
Yeah, it's a very good, like, that story is a very good way of, like, Lex kind of explaining away, but also explaining his intentions with the car. And it also helps, like, build the character that is Lex.
Yeah, he also says a line that he repeats in season 7 when he says that when he saved him, he gave him a new life. He says similar things when Supergirl eventually shows up and gets him out of the water, out of the police vehicle that's submerged in the dam, and he's drowning. She comes in, gets him out. So,
it is a lot of foreshadowing in this episode that pays off farther, like even much farther, to basically the last episode of the series.
Yeah.
All right. So I guess the other thing, to get back to the episode, Chloe contacts Clark and Lana to meet her at the torch, to meet her at the torch. Clark and Lana show up there first. Lana explains how she found the wall of weird and how basically seeing the worst moment of her life over and over again makes her feel like crap. And that everybody has their secrets, but like my secret is for the world to see. And once again, they show the picture of her as a kid on the Time magazine. She asks Clark, what would you do if like everybody knew your worst moment? Like if, you know, the people you cared about died, and he says, like, I would do anything I could to go back and try to prevent it from happening, which is kind of, again, both foreshadowing what ends up happening with Lana, I think, a couple seasons from now, as well as a kind of, you know, what happened in Superman 1 with Superman traveling back in time to save Lois.
Yeah.
Which I don't know why they decide over and over again to have Superman be able to travel back in time, but I guess it's a way to, like, have stakes and then take them away. Much like another show that we watch.
Yeah, a show that will not be named.
All right, so Clark and Lana leave. Chloe and Pete show up at the Loft of Solitude. Say, we missed you. Chloe's like, oh, you know, the cops think, is this here? You know, Chloe basically is like, oh, I found a picture of the guy, and look, it looks exactly like the guy we saw in the diner. And Clark's like, oh, maybe it's like a grandson or something. Chloe's like, no, I think the meteorites turned to the young. So she basically solves the whole thing right there, but no one listens to her.
Yeah, at first they think, I think either Pete or Chloe says it's a copy, that it could be a copycat.
Yeah, I think Chloe says the cops think it's a copycat.
Yeah.
But she's like, look at the picture. Like, this is either, like, she's like, they think, you know, he's like, oh, it could be his grandson. Looks like, or it could be him, and he got turned younger. But they also don't know why he killed that guy. And then, so they go, the group leaves to go check out his room. This is where we see them go, Chloe and Peter going through stuff. Clark then talks to Cassandra, and they basically have a discussion where no one's ever seen the vision with her. It's always what she sees every time. And then, I'm trying to think what happens here. Basically, she tells him, she grabs his hand, they have another vision, and he sees, like, a necklace and, like, a blonde chick, and he sees the guy and a knife. So he's like, do you know where she is? And she's like, I'm not, like, a radio thing, I just get these glimpses. So then he goes to go see what Clark and Peter are doing as they're going through papers. Oh, look, here's the person that I saw wearing the necklace in the paper that Chloe has in her hand. Clark runs away, realizes it's the girl that works at the coffee shop. He goes in right when the guy's about to choke her, kicks open the door, or kicks through the glass of the door.
Well, actually, no, he does both. He kicks the door open and the glass shatters. It was a really cool moment.
Yeah, it was a good effect. And, like, very, like, the killer literally, like jumps up and is like, what the hell is going on? But he has a knife, puts it to the woman's throat, kind of backs them out, and says, don't come near me or I'll kill her. When they get outside, he looks away, and Clark is now standing outside because he's super sped over there. And the guy's like, what the hell is going on? He throws the girl into the street. Clark grabs her and gets on top of her as a truck runs over his back, ripping up his jacket, which we actually do see, and it's actually kind of burning, but then he's fine. She doesn't realize what's going on, and the truck driver, I guess, says, you know, he thought he hit him, but he doesn't really care because he didn't kill anybody.
Yeah, he didn't want to deal with all the forms.
Clark goes after our killer and once again does like his super move of big booting the guy off of a roof, and he lands on a truck and is arrested.
Well, we also see in slow mo, well, Clark is like circling around, just getting views on all angles. And then he turns around and in slow mo, Harry tries to stab him in the heart with a knife.
Oh yes, and it shatters. That was actually kind of an awesome slow mo effect.
Yeah, there's a Smallville music video that I tend to watch over and over because it's really awesome. And that moment or that scene is in there gets me, it pumps me up every time.
I feel like it's in the intro at some point for like the opening sequence of the show. I feel like they use it in that or maybe in something else. All right, so. Harry gets arrested, and Clark goes to talk to his parents. We get the awesome line from Jonathan where he basically says, your destiny may be to help people, but ours is to protect you.
Yeah, it's furthering Jonathan Kent is one of the best parents of all time in television.
Yeah, because he both understands that Clark can and should help people, but he still has that fear that a parent would have to protect their child from danger. And in this case, the danger would be the world knowing that he's different.
Yeah, and that mainly comes from the guy hitting Clark and him not asking questions.
Mm-hmm.
And Jonathan is worried about what if he did ask questions.
It's a good moment in the show to show the awesomeness that is Jonathan Kent in the show. All right, so we don't have much more left to this episode. The cops go to pick up Harry from the hospital because he was hurt. When they get in, we are presented with old Harry, once again, handcuffed to the bed. The cops are completely befuddled, and basically Chloe tells Clark that the cops think it was an obsessed fan and are going with the idea that he broke out, brought in old Harry, and then replaced him and then left again, which is dumb. But I guess in a world where you haven't seen crazy stuff yet, this would be how you would figure out it happened. So we go back to the nursing home. Clark confronts Harry, says that he knows it was him. Harry basically tells him, what the hell are you going to do about it, and makes a nurse come in, and Clark leaves. After this, Harry wheelchairs his old butt outside and nosedives into the pond again.
With the stem, it's kind of cool because we see, as he's looking in, we see a reflection of Eric Christian Olsen.
Yeah, it was a good effect. But yes, once again, he rises up and he's young again.
And he wastes another wheelchair.
Yep. I believe we go back to Harry, Pete, and Clark are going through this stuff and trying to figure out what is going on. Oh, I did miss, while Clark and Harry are talking, he does his thing that he did with Mana about, like, heritage. And he says, like, oh, you're Clark Kent? Like, your father must be Jonathan Kent, and his father was Hiram Kent. But I don't remember you appearing on the family tree.
Yeah.
Which was a good line. But it does get to where we see next, which is they're going through newspaper articles, and we see the guy who died's her father, we see the girl from the coffee shop's mom, and we also see the name Hiram Kent. So Clark realizes that his father's next because he, once again,
he's going after the children of the jury members.
Yep. And so we cut back to the farm, knock on the door. Once again, young Harry is there, same uniform as before, saying that there's a gas thing, your husband called. Martha is the only one home. Jonathan's not there. So she's like, okay, and she closes the door because she can obviously feel something's creepy. But as she walks around the corner, Harry has gone through one of their other doors in their house because I guess they have, I don't know.
They have multiple doors to get in.
Yeah, there's a lot of ways to get into the Kent house. He gets in, chases after Martha. She runs away. She goes into the barn. And hides in the grain silo. We get an awesome kind of Mike Myers, Jason scene where he picks up, I guess Jason would be better because it's a machete, and then he actually turns on a grinder and starts sharpening it, which was kind of an awesome shot. Like, that was very menacing. He goes after her. He finds her in the thing. I think he, like, stabs through the grain silo.
Yeah.
And he gets in there. They're fighting, and whatever mechanism to make the stuff kind of flow into the silo starts and takes the two of them out. Clark shows up just in time, as Jonathan does, to stop Jonathan, somehow decides to look at Martha's car and sees that the tires have been slashed. Then awesomely uses his x-ray vision to kind of scan and sees that they're inside the grain silo. He rips open the door. Him and Jonathan go in. They find Martha. Jonathan gives two quick mouth kind of puffs and she's up. And then we get to see Harry's arm in the background go from young to old. In a very interesting, kind of similar to when we see Clark get kryptonite arthritis. It reminded me of that.
Well, this also happened earlier in the episode where he was, after he was playing the piano in the cafe, his hand was starting to get.
Yeah, it was starting to revert.
Yeah.
And basically the next thing, which is the best part of the entire episode, in my opinion, is Lex goes, brings flowers to Cassandra. He has them in his hand. And she goes to his future, and we get to see her vision, which is first, we see the presidential symbol on the Oval Office, Lex in his all-white suit, sitting at the desk, cut to a feet in bright light of sunflowers. And
okay, Lex, this point, I don't know if this happened to you too, but Black Hole Sun started playing in my head.
Oh, no, it did not. I didn't notice that, when we first cut to the sunflower thing, it was, really bright. Maybe the transfer didn't work well, but when I was watching on Hulu, that it was, oversaturated. So it was really, the look was off for me at first. But then as, the brightness goes down, we see Lex in an all-white suit but with black leather gloves, kind of OJ style, reach out and touch one of the sunflowers, and the entire field dies. Everything turns black, the sky turns red. And then it starts raining blood, and we see the blood drops all over his white suit. And then it cuts back to real life, and Lex is like, so what did you see? And she's dead. The vision kills her, and he freaks out.
I have some trivia about this.
Okay. He drops his flowers, Clark enters the room, and basically the nurse says, oh, she's gone. And he's like, oh, she saw her future, because she was the one who was close to him that died. And then that, credits.
Okay, in the future, in Lex's future sequence, the glove he's wearing is a nod to the comics because he had to wear the glove because of his long-term exposure to kryptonite.
Yeah, I saw that. Did you see where they filmed that aspect?
Yeah, on the set of West Wing.
Yeah, I thought that was awesome. They're like, oh, they're just like, oh, we have a president thing right over here. Let's go do that.
And yeah, this episode formed part of Alfred Goff and Miles Miller's initial pitch to Warner for the series.
And again, it's we get to see the Lex in the all-white suit, which is such a great visual, especially when you had the blood rain. Not the UA Bowl blood rain, but actual rain that is made of blood.
Yeah, it's kind of hard for me to pick who's, it's kind of hard to find both an MVP of the week.
And a best scene, because
an MVP, a best scene, good scene, a bad scene, and a least viable player.
Yeah, to me, the only scene that I thought was kind of goofy was that initial coffee house scene where he's complaining about the prices of things. But otherwise, everyone's acting was on point. Nothing was bad. The scenes with Lex are good. Clark is awesome in this episode. The killer. They did such a good job. When he's chasing Martha, there is, he's full on serial killer mode, doing crazy, creepy stuff. And then the old woman is awesome in this episode as well. This is just all around one of the best episodes of the show. There's nothing wrong with it. And then it just ends on such an amazing, the ultimate foreshadowing of anything ever. A season one foreshadowing how they end up ending this show, this last episode of the series. So yeah, I don't even, what other things did you want to talk about here? I feel like everything was amazing in this episode. I love Cassandra. I just, want to guffaw over this episode. Everything was amazing.
The actor who played the older version of Harry, George Murdoch, he played Boss Vegas in Batman the Animated Series. He was also on Lois and Clark, The New Adventures of Superman, as Burton Newcombe.
Yeah, the only Easter egg I have is, I don't know if you looked it up, but what the actual thing he writes in Greek says.
No.
It actually says search results, words found. So whatever he says it meant, that's nothing. They just literally put it in.
Oh,
like,
yeah, it's just dummy text?
Yeah, it's just dummy text. Which I thought I always find funny that they're like, yeah, we're too lazy. We're going to actually use four actual Greek words, but we're not going to actually have them mean what we want the character to say. Because he says, like, a full sentence, and I guess that would have been a lot of text to write on the napkin.
Speaking of dummy text, have you ever heard of the Demon in a Bottle Iron Man story?
Yes.
Instead of putting dummy text in Jarvis's resignation letter, they actually used a resignation letter of someone who didn't want to work for Jim Shooter.
It's actually amazing. That's the opposite of dummy text.
Yeah, it's just, I wonder what Jim Shooter thought of it. I mean, his head was already through I wonder if his head just shot through the roof because it was already at the top to begin with.
That's awesome. I think the only other thought I had was on the effects, which was the green screen, which I believe is the truck scene. It's just quickly bad. When he's under the truck, it's not bad. It's when the truck is about to hit them and he like knocks them over. It's just absolutely horrible. Like I guess to me, like all this show does effects wise is show how far green screen technology has come. Cause a lot of the other stuff does not look bad at all. Like, even the knife, like the slow-mo stuff it looks exactly like the stuff we see on The Flash or Supergirl when she's in super speed. Like it looks exactly the same. All right, so did you have any other final thoughts on this episode?
That's just the episode. I mean, I've seen it multiple times. Every time I see it, it blows me away.
Yeah, it's absolutely amazing. And that future sequence is one of the most iconic parts, I think, of any episode in this series. It's like when I think of this show, I think of that Lex walking through the field with sunflowers.
Oh, yeah, I forgot there's one more piece of trivia. In Lex's future, you can see Batman's cape and cowl among the rubble behind Lex.
Oh, I did not notice that.
It's hard to see, but yeah, I think they snuck it in there. And a funny thing about the actor who played Harry and the writer of the episode, Doris Egan, both were involved with Torchwood Miracle Day.
Oh.
Yeah, Doris Egan was a writer on it, and George Murdoch played a preacher.
All right. Should we give a preview for our next episode?
Sure.
So that'll be episode 7. All right. So episode 7, Clark must save Pete from being literally devoured by a female classmate, Joey Melville, whose diet of kryptonite-affected vegetables causes her to shed weight faster than she can handle. This is episode 7, Craving.
Written by Michael Green.
Way before she was famous.
Amy Adams.
Which is kind of bananas to think that she's even in this show.
Yeah, that's why when the Man of Steel casting when she was cast as Lois Lane, I lost it because I was like, she can't play Lois Lane, she was on Smallville with the better Lois Lane.
I don't know if the Smallville version of Lois Lane's my favorite.
Well, I'm not talking about like seasons 4 to 8, more like seasons, not the last two seasons.
Oh, okay. Yeah, she definitely...
Especially when they go their preview of the future, like 7 years ahead.
I wonder if I had to rank the Lois Lanes, who would be the top.
Yes, because also Margot Kidder passed away.
Yeah, I definitely think the lowest would be, what's her name from Superman Returns?
Oh, Kate Bosworth?
Yeah, not that it was her fault, but that character just had like nothing going on, except for a shitty kid and Cyclops. But I would have to rewatch the old Superman movies to really take a look at Kidder. And then there's also the Lois and Clark version.
Yeah, Terry Hatcher. There's also Noelle Neal. Who was on The Adventures of Superman with George Reeves.
Yeah. As you know, that if you included the cartoon, the Adventures of Superman version is definitely my top. I love that version.
Oh, Dan Delaney?
Yeah. Like, that's like the best, Lois and Lex. And then Rosenbaum is probably my second favorite Lex.
Yeah.
All right, so, plugs?
Yeah, you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at TheAlanMuir and ComicsBoy, respectively. Don't forget to join the Facebook group. Don't forget to subscribe to the Phantom Zone podcast so you can get episodes of the show. That's it for me.
All right, don't forget to follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Lou A. Gonzalez. I'm also in the Phantom Zone group. Be sure to check out all the other episodes and all the other shows in the stream. That's the other Phantom Zone shows. And always rate, review, subscribe, like, share, do all those things. 5 stars. So catch you next episode. I'm Luke Gonzalez.
I'm Alan Muir, and this podcast stands for Truth, Justice, and the American Way.